hypnotized by the illusion that the best things in life are free. And while that may be true in a certain context, it is still truer that these best things, whatever they happen to be, have not always been free. It doesn't matter what it is, if it's good and if it's worth having, then somewhere and sometimes somebody had to pay. Our generation, perhaps more than any other, has seemingly been infected with the age-old disease of wanting privilege without responsibility. We want the best life has to offer, but we don't want to work to get it. We want sex, but we don't want the baby. We want marriage, but we don't want the obligation. We even want salvation, we just don't want the cross. All of the machinery of our world is running full speed ahead toward the end of making everything convenient for us. We're busy trying to take the work and the sacrifice and the effort out of every aspect of life. We're trying to construct our own version of the Garden of Eden, but we're only making the fires of hell hotter in the process. There is this dangerously destructive attitude prevalent in our world that we can dance to the music without paying the piper. The real danger is that this attitude has even spilled over into the sphere of religion. Suddenly there has emerged on the scene of time a cadre of false prophets who have filled their coffers with silver and gold by capitalizing on this satanic spirit of the age, this clamor for convenience. Wolves are all attired in sheep's clothes, operating in our world's pulpits, preaching their blessing plan. And it does not take a spiritual genius to see that all of these various blessing plans are designed such that it makes it appear that we're getting maximum blessing with minimum sacrifice. This prophet will make you rich if you send him $10. This prophet will make all of your domestic problems vanish if you buy a prayer cloth. This prophet will transform you into an attractive, effervescent personality if. There's always an if attached, and the plan is always designed such that it appears that we're getting maximum privilege and pleasure while it minimizes our commitment and responsibility. In all aspects of life, people are being led to believe that there is a way to get something for nothing. And it's tragic, but people can be led to believe this foolishness because from the depths of our souls, we really want something for nothing. People are tired of struggling. They're tired of the nip and tuck pace of life. We're turning thumbs down on anything that requires something of us. Somehow we feel cheated in life. We feel that we've been promised a whole lot and we've got so little to show for it. We're even all but fed up with this old-time religion. It's too hard and too demanding. We don't want to travel this rough road and climb the high mountain. We want payday right now. We even want religion that doesn't require any sacrifice. We want it to be full of blessings but void of demand. And so everywhere, the masses are flocking to hear the person who claims to have discovered a shortcut to the kingdom. We no longer want to travel the route that leads to the thorny crown and the old rugged cross. It's sad to see so many people being led astray by what St. Paul has called seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. For you do not have to be 100 years old to recognize that the truth really is that there is nothing in life worth having that you will not have to endure some pain and sacrifice to get. Certainly nobody relishes the idea of pain. We seek to avoid pain and discomfort at all costs. Only a deranged mind indulges in pain for the sake of pain. We even in our own lives back away from certain involvement, and our excuse is I can't get involved because I don't want to get hurt. We don't want pain, my brethren, but pain is a reality. What carpenter is there who had not hit his thumb with a hammer in the process of driving his nail? Or what parent is there who has not suffered some heartache in the course of rearing their children? So as much as we would like to avoid it, the fact is that you will experience some pain. And pain always leaves its mark upon our lives in the form of an ugly scar. These scars may be psychological, they may be physical, they may be both. Our personality, our view of life, is ultimately hammered into shape by the knocks and the bruises that we experience in life. We say of certain people, so-and-so has a chip on their shoulder. And what we're really saying, whether we recognize it or not, is that somewhere, some way, this person has been hurt, and the scar is revealed in the form of a bitter and withdrawn personality. Pain always leaves its mark upon our lives in the form of an ugly scar, and every scar tells a story. When you go home tonight, you look over your body, look real closely at the dents and the scratches and the cuts and the bruises and the gashes, and healed though they be, remember the story that produced the scar. I saw a boyhood friend of mine not long ago, whom I hadn't seen for quite some time. He had changed in appearance, and one notable difference was that there was an ugly scar on his face that stretched across his forehead down under his cheek. As we talked, he related to me how he had gotten mixed up with the wrong crowd. He had gotten in a fight and been cut and left for dead. He's alive tonight, and he's all healed up, but the story of a dark and painful period in his living is all stitched up in that scar. All of us have some scars. There's nothing wrong with that. The fact is, you do not get out of this world without getting some scars. But most of our scars are the result of our own foolishness. Very few of us have what you might call redemptive scars, or scars that have been received on the front line of service. You don't get through life without getting some scars, but you ought to live so that your scars are redemptive. Rather than being marks of shame, they ought to live so that your scars are redemptive. Rather than being marks of shame, they ought to be badges of honor. Like the Purple Heart medallion awarded to the soldier that's wounded in combat, then these become the decorative symbols of your conviction and courage. Yes, our scars tell the story. They were busy discussing rumors of the Lord's alleged appearance, and while they sat there and vacillated back and forth between hope and fear, Jesus himself appeared in their midst. He gave no sign of his approach. Angels were guarding the empty tomb on Easter morning, but no angel announced his presence. There was no sound that rent the air as at the day of Pentecost. No wall failed as with the conquest of Jericho. No door was open. Everything had been sealed to protect them against the Jewish enemy. But the text says that when they looked up and looked around, there Jesus stood in their midst. Luke says they were frightened as though it was a ghost. For some reason, something had changed about our Lord's appearance, such that his disciples didn't recognize him when they saw him. And so when Jesus wanted them to know that it was really he himself and not some spiritual imposter, then Luke says he showed them his hands and his feet. Now, what story was there in these bloody, gaping scars, fresh from where nails had been driven, that Jesus wanted his disciples to know? Well, come here and see in the first instance that he wanted them to know that suffering is a necessity. Now, everybody is busy in life trying to avoid suffering and pain, but when you try to live a redemptive life, a life that stands for something, then there's no way to avoid it. Jesus was the best man the world has ever known and the best man that the world will ever know, and yet Jesus suffered. He had sat down and studied the route that he had to take to saviorhood, and when he saw the cross staring him in the face, his soul trembled with fear. He fell to his knees and cried to the Father for another way, but he discovered that there was no road that led to saviorhood except Scar Road. Suffering and pain is a necessity in life. These Hollywood scars and these advertising industries try to lead us to believe that we're not supposed to experience any scars and suffering. And they try to lure us into buying all of these powders and creams and gels to cover up our scars. But when you're trying to live a redemptive life in the service of the Lord, you can't put porcelain and you can't put these creams and gels where you get hurt in this business. And my brethren, everybody suffers. See, one of the devil's keenest tricks is that he tries to make you think that only the good folks suffer. But that's a lie and a trick. Evil people suffer too, and maybe worse than we do. abused bodies and hardened consciences and built-in suspicion and aging before their time. All of these are some of the ways that evil folks suffer. There is nobody in life who escapes suffering. There are only three kinds of people in the world: a good man, a bad man, and the God man. And all three of them suffered that day on Calvary. You will suffer, you will experience some pain. The only good part is that you can choose to suffer redemptively. You can suffer trying to be somebody worthwhile. You can suffer trying to stand up for what's right. You can suffer trying to be a good soldier of Jesus Christ. And when you suffer for something, you don't mind the suffering and you don't mind the pain. See, most people suffer and don't have anything to show for it except an ugly scar and a head full of bad memories. So since you must suffer, suffer trying to live a better life. Suffer trying to rear your children to serve the Lord. Suffer trying to be the best preacher you can be. Suffer trying to make this world a better place. Jesus showed them his hands and his feet and said to them, "Look, brethren, I suffered. My body is still red with soreness. Yeah, I suffered, but when I look back on what I suffered for, I don't mind it. Because I see that your salvation is intact. A bridge has been built that leads from time into eternity. Your death has been defeated. The grave has been robbed of its power. And eternal life stands as an ever-present possibility before you. Yeah, I suffered, but I don't mind because I got something to show for it." You will suffer. You will get scarred. So suffer for something. In the second place, Jesus wanted them to know that your scars enabled you to bring healing to others. These disciples were engulfed in a sea of hopelessness. They had nothing else to look forward to in life. The best they had ever known in life, the highest they had ever looked in life, had all been buried in the tomb with Jesus. But when he showed them his hands and his feet, and they saw that it was really he, then their hearts filled up. Hope burst forth in their souls once more. Only a person who has suffered is qualified to help somebody else when they're in the midst of pain. If you don't know what it is to suffer and feel pain, then you can't be much help to a suffering man. But when you live through something, when you've been scarred by pain, when you've been in the storm for so long, when like Jesus you've been to hell and back, when you got a testimony that God saw you through anyhow, that he was a light for you in the midnight hour, then you can help bring healing to somebody else's situation. See, a whole lot of people are insensitive to our pain. They dismiss it and try to act like, "Oh, it's going to be all right." But only when you've been scarred can you truly sympathize. Yeah, Jesus showed them his hands and his feet and said, "Look at my scars, brethren. These qualify me to be your high priest. I've been touched by all of your infirmities. These scars help me to feel for you. You got a heartache? My heart was pierced with a sword. Have you been scarred by betrayal? Well, so have I. Have you been hurt by the very ones you tried to help? Me too. Have you been rejected by your best so-called friend? So have I. Have you been lied on? Well, me too. I can feel for you, and I got scars to prove it." I tell you, scars enable you to help somebody else. Look around, young girl. Look at that woman whose hair is white with the wisdom of the ages and whose story is engraved in the furrows of her face. You better listen at that old woman when she talks to you. She can tell you something and save you some pain and a whole lot of sleepless nights. Look around, young boy. Don't dismiss that old man as being a fool. He's been where you going and coming back. If you listen to him, he can help you avoid some pain. My brethren, if you're hurting in your heart, if you cry when you're all by yourself, if you have to go home and the only way you can get any relief is hold your own heart, if you ain't got nobody to talk to, I recommend that you talk to Jesus. He's been touched by all of our infirmities. That's why I like that song, "I Must Tell Jesus All of My Trouble. For he is a kind and compassionate friend. And if I would ask him, he will deliver and make up my troubles quickly and easy. Oh, I must tell Jesus."
He's the only one who's got time to listen. Because eternity is here. I must tell Jesus. He's the only one who wants to listen. Because I'm his child. I must tell Jesus. He's the only one can do anything about it. Because he's got all power. When you tell Jesus, you're telling somebody that won't spread your business in the street. When you tell Jesus, you're telling somebody who'll lay your hand on his heart and understand. When you tell Jesus, Jesus can help you and Jesus alone. Come here. Now, most people are ashamed of their scars, but Jesus wasn't ashamed of his scars. See, he didn't hesitate to flash these scars on the bewildered disciples. He showed them his hands and his feet. As if to say, brethren, these are the tokens of my victory. Oh, I know on Friday it looked like everything was all over. I'm scarred up, but I'm the winner. The nails had me, but they couldn't hold me. Death took me, but it couldn't keep me. The grave snatched me, but it couldn't stop me. I got wounded, but I'm the winner. And my brethren, that's what really counts most in life. Not that you get through life without any scars, but that you get through life victorious. See, what matters is not that you have problems in your church, but that you handle the problem and don't let the problem handle you. What matters is not that you get caught up in a situation, but take charge of the situation and don't let it take charge of you. You will get scarred up in life, but the victory is to come out the winner. Jesus looked and said to his brethren, said, look at my hands. Hands that hung the worlds in space. Look at my hands. Hands that stretched the blue out canopy of heaven or hell. Look at my hands. Hands that flung the twinkling stars against the nocturnal sky. Look at my hands. Hands that scooped out the mighty channels of the deep. That pushed the valleys down and bore the mountains up. Look at my hands. Hands that hung up the sun and moon as golden and silver chandeliers. Look at my hands. I'm wounded, but I'm the winner. Well, just a few days after that, Jesus took these same disciples and walked out a little ways with them to the cleft of Olivet. He looked up and called down a cloud and worked his wondrous way back to heaven. When the cloud stopped at the portals of glory, there was an angel standing outside patrolling the chaos. The angel just looked up and said, there come Jesus. Another angel on the inside heard him, and every angel in heaven rushed up to see him. But when they saw him this time, they were stunned. They had seen him before he left the sacred precincts of eternity, all wrapped and garbed in his royal robe. Then there he was, wounded and bandaged and bleeding and sore. And the angel said, what happened, my Lord? Did the cloud run into a star? Jesus said, angel, you wouldn't understand. You see, yours is a different nature. I was omnipotent when I left here, but these scars give me claim to a new kind of power. These scars have given me redeeming power. And my brethren, what I want you to know, if that sin has scarred up your life, if a mistake has messed up your reputation, I recommend that you cling to the nail-scarred hands. The saving power in the hands and feet of Jesus. Brother preachers, I don't know about you, but that was a nail-scarred hand that picked me up and turned me around. That was a nail-scarred hand that put my feet on marble solid ground. That was a nail-scarred hand that put joy down in my soul. Ever since that day that I got touched by the nail-scarred hand, sometimes I'm up and sometimes I'm down. But I'm just going to run on and see my Jesus. You will have pain. You will have trial. And you will have trouble. You have to cry by yourself sometimes. But run on and see Jesus. Ain't nothing but a scarred up cloud going to get to heaven no how. But John said he saw. They look beat up. Look battered and bruised. Look worn and weary. Garments all stained with blood, sweat, and tears. But he saw him passing through the gate. So if when you tried and failed in your trying, hands sore and scarred from the work you've begun, pick up your cross and run swiftly to meet him. He'll understand and he'll say, well done. You fought a good fight. Hey, well done. You kept the faith. Well done. You had to struggle